Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solaria Report. This is Catherine Austin Fitz and Tim Caban. I'm always worried I'm going to mispronounce your name.
I say Caban, but Caban? You can call me anything. Oh, yeah. Just don't call me late for dinner.
Anyway, so we are here in Pennsylvania. Tim is the head of Copper Beach Advisors. He's joined us several times now on the Equity Overview. He's going to be joining us regularly. We're very pleased about that.
As am I.
And we wanted to cover today a couple of things, but the big one is insurance. Mm-hmm. So we want to talk a little roundup about the markets and some other things, but we'll hold that to the end and dive into insurance. And one of the reasons is we've never significantly covered insurance on the Solaria Report. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very important topic, one that I wanted to do well. Mm-hmm. And so I've been waiting for somebody who I feel understands both insurance and general financial planning and understands what's really going on in the world.
Yeah.
It's very easy to find insurance experts who don't understand what's going on in the world, and it's a lethal combination.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah,
it can be. So I'm very pleased.
I tell people that usually when I'm speaking to them about insurance, it's usually the first time they're speaking to somebody about insurance who isn't trying to sell it to them at the same time.
Right, right. And that's important. I think insurance can be an outstanding and excellent tool. And it's a tool I believe we all need. Mm-hmm. But it can drain a huge amount of money. If you do it improperly, it can waste a great deal of money.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Okay, so let's dive in. I want to start with life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So describe life insurance and how to use life insurance effectively.
So I think there are two broad categories of life insurance. I would call it term or temporary insurance that has an end point where the mm-hmm. insurance doesn't exist anymore, and then permanent insurance, which lasts for the rest of your life.
Right.
And there's, you know, many publications that have published something called buy term and invest the difference. And I think for many people that are not at a high level of wealth, that's an appropriate strategy, because you're trying to provide for the fact that you may not be here at some point. So you might be insuring income of a breadwinner in a family. And so it can serve that purpose. And then if you can grow assets during the time where the insurance is in force,
you won't need it.
You won't need it by the time you get to the end.
Right.
Permanent insurance is more expensive. It does have appropriate uses. I think maybe we've even talked before about the things like the family farm, where you have a big estate tax bill, which in today's world is really only for very wealthy people,
right?
Or a large farm, a large piece of property. But in that case, if you owe an estate tax bill and you want to give the farm to your family, to your children, your grandchildren,
right?
If you don't provide to pay the tax bill, they have to sell the farm,
right?
And that goes out of the family.
And the same with the business.
Yes,
you have a big business, mm-hmm. so if you don't want to have to liquidate quickly,
mm-hmm.
it's a great tool.
Also in business with multiple owners, there's something called buy-sell agreements and things you can provide for within the business so that if one of the business owners goes away for some reason, it doesn't ruin the business.
So during the pandemic, we had a family financial disclosure form and other disclosure forms for COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to push people, if your spouse or someone in your family is insisting on doing this, you have to get life insurance. You have to get disability insurance. Otherwise, an adverse event or death could bankrupt the family. And you've got to put that between. And yet I ran into, I don't know how to describe it. People were, well, I don't want to think that way. It's like, no, you need to think that way.
And it's also not the easy flip of the switch, because even to get term insurance, you have to go through underwriting.
Right.
It's not just, okay, can I sign up and pay? No, we have to arrange a date. Somebody's going to come and take your blood pressure. We're going to do medical testing.
Right.
And so it takes time to do it. And it's just another excuse not to do it, I think, if you're not inclined. Now, I would agree with you. It's vitally important in today's world. If you're going to be exposed to these things, or if you have a family member who's...
Well, somebody in my family who I'm liable for, not just in terms of money, but time, if they said to me, I'm going to go out this weekend and play Russian roulette.
Right.
I would say, well, I want a life insurance.
Yes.
Because
that's a good way to put it. It's the equivalent of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what I've found is there's tremendous variability in the quality of insurance company. So, and it is reflected in the pricing. If you get a pricing from an insurance company, which is an excellent credit rating and is really, I would say, is one of the best, mm-hmm. it's much more expensive than the others. And so this is an area where you want to think very carefully about price, because you want a life insurance policy that's going to last.
Yeah. And if you understand that, you can not blindly but partially think of the price of the insurance as an indication of quality. You have to do the due diligence to verify that.
Right.
But you're right that the higher credits, the better. And the reason you care about that is that if the insurance has to pay out, you want to make sure it's going to pay out.
Right. So we did a special report with Lucy Commissar early this year, and she basically had done a study of three insurance companies which had been purchased by private equity firms or had really recapitalized in a way that dramatically lowered their credit.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do if you've got either a term or a permanent life insurance policy, and suddenly an excellent company goes out and does something that dramatically lowers their credit? How do you monitor that? What do you do?
Yeah, you do need to, I guess you really would need to pay close attention. It's not easy,
right.
But if you get a notice, usually when those things happen, they send you documents in the mail that says the private equity company purchased. And so when you get those kind of documents.
So if there's a change of control, they have to notify you?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'd say that would be the trigger for me to say, hey, let me review this again. And there.
So what everybody's going to write and say,
yes.
I can't review it myself.
No.
So I got to go find a financial planner.
You do, or even, you know, there are trusted insurance people out
right.
there, and they do sell products, so that's fine. You have to find somebody that's reliable. And how do you do that? It's, I think it's like anything else. It's like the questions we listed in the last time with insurance. You have to ask. Ask them to disclose how they get the elephant in the room on the table. How do you get paid? Do you only represent one insurance company, or do you look at a bunch of different ones?
Right.
Which is either a captive agent when they sell only one company, or a broker that sells multiple companies.
So last quarter we went through how to find a financial planner, how to find a financial professional.
Yes.
And so if anybody wants to go back and listen to that, they can. And we go through that. But you have to be... I find myself trying to communicate. This happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was doing a show, and I was trying to communicate the notion that you can't just assume that you can trust every financial institution or professional. You have to differentiate. This came up because a very famous healthcare provider got thrown off of JP Morgan Chase.
Yes.
And so there was a big discussion on that. I found it shocking that they were still...
At JP Morgan Chase.
I mean,
yeah.
That, to me, it's like, you know, why would you not do risk management? Why can you not differ it? I mean, an institution that has a demonstrated record of criminal behavior, why would you feel safe there? But there seems to be this inability to translate the growing risk in the, you know, sort of in the macro environment down to my managing my finances.
Yeah.
You know, people will regularly say, well, my account is too small. They wouldn't care about
mm-hmm.
me. It's like, well, they care about every penny. Are
yeah.
you crazy? So part of this is getting someone to understand that you are responsible to make sure that your financial provider or institution has integrity. And you're going to have to take the time to learn how to do that and to find and vet people,
mm-hmm.
which we can all do.
It's everybody can do it. I think if you could just get over that initial hurdle to start taking action and ask for help and then evaluate the help. There's the old saying, I think, from Ronald Reagan, that's a trust but verify.
Right.
Which means don't trust anybody or trust it.
Right.
But check it.
But trust that you can understand it.
Yes.
Trust
yeah.
that I can get intellectual mastery of this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so quality matters tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important with life insurance to understand why you need it and why you want it. And I think for people who can afford to self-insure, you know, do it
mm-hmm.
at some point because it's not economic.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so let's go. We want to talk a little bit about beneficiaries.
Well, that goes, I put that with life insurance because when you have changes in your life, right. things that we have divorce or death or remarriage, people won't go back and change those forms. And especially in a
Why?
Because they don't think about it.
Really?
And sometimes I've seen it in real life. Now, and also pensions and things. When you get divorced, it's a special thing to pay attention. If you ever get divorced, make sure you check all your beneficiary forms, because I've seen it where people leave their pension to their ex-husband. And we caught it because we looked at the documents.
Right.
But they don't think about it. They're like, I thought I did it, or the form got lost, or whatever it is. So I just put that as a public service reminder. If you're in any kind of change of life situation, double check your beneficiary to make sure it's what you want and what's appropriate.
Right. 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 I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen that happen. Okay, medical and dental insurance. So medical insurance, we've seen, you know, lots of changes in the last 10 years. So talk to us a little bit about medical.
Yeah, I think that it's widely known that medical is over the last 10 years is even more towards corporate control. You have, you know, private equity rolling up medical systems and local doctors and all this type of thing. So it's increasingly hard to navigate that and get an honest person to deal with you without conflict or with disclosing the conflict. So I think it's critically important that just through COVID, we've all talked about this and been aware, but to take responsibility for your own decisions. And so first and foremost.
During the litigation, I had constant challenges with Blue Cross Blue Shield and finally rolled over into the Tennessee system. But the Tennessee system would constantly throw me off, and I'd have to do more and more invasive forms to get back on. And finally, I decided, you know something, I'm going out without this, because the only time I will ever use this is when if I have a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a trauma expert. It's a transportation accident. So AAA, I love AAA. Mm-hmm. I've been a AAA member for my entire driving career. And so I got a catastrophic policy for car accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very careful with my auto insurance, between my auto insurance and the AAA catastrophic, to be absolutely covered for any car accident or transportation trauma.
Yes.
And then I went without for a long period of time, and instead I spent that money on health.
Mm-hmm.
And people had pointed this out to me, that as the cost of health care insurance went up, it came down to a budgeting question. Do you spend your money on health? Or do you spend your money on health insurance? And each has risk, you know? Yeah. So you have to take responsibility and make the choice. And then finally, I found Samaritan Ministries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there are these groups often for Christians, which will allow groups to self-insure each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used that until I was eligible for Medicare and a supplemental. But there were unbelievably difficult choices of which risks I wanted to live with.
Yeah.
And what I discovered is health care insurance for me was not worth, you know, by spending my money on health, it was a lot less risky than spending my money on health insurance. But that is a, you know.
And it gets back to the idea of whether are you aware of what you're paying or not. A lot of people that work at a job as an employee, it's taken out of your paycheck.
Right.
And that's, I don't have to deal with that. But when you take the spending for health into your own control, you have to make the payments, you have to think about this, you have to do the receipts, you have to do right. all this stuff. And it's, I'd say again, if you just get started, it gets easier.
Well, here's the thing, if they are taking it out of your paycheck, you better read the specifics to know what the benefits are, because you may think you have benefits you don't have.
That's true, and I think it's been true for 30 years at least, where if you have any kind of significant medical treatment with a standard medical plan, you have to document, because they will try to
right.
deny, and pay, I'm only paying for this, I'm not paying for that. I spoke to Joe on Tuesday, I spoke to this lady on Wednesday, and you have to have all your ducks in a row to advocate for yourself just to get
right.
even what the policy takes says.
Right. So I know doctors who tell me that, and they will get pre-clearance from the insurance company for anything, but they make all their patients sign forms saying, if the insurance company doesn't reimburse, you're liable cash.
Yep.
Okay. So the health insurance is as if and when it's not, it doesn't cover you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the doctors are saying, you know, you're going to have to chase them. We can't, you know, we can't create a business just chasing insurance companies that are fraudulent.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what is happening is they, in terms of reimbursements, they only do procedures that are approved by the insurance company unless mm-hmm. unless there's full disclosure to the patient. And even with pre-approval, less than 50% and sometimes less than 25% are being reimbursed.
Yeah.
So the insurance company is approving the procedure and then they're not paying. And it's fraud.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's massive insurance fraud.
It is. I'd say the one thing I would mention there with regard to healthcare is the difference between acute and chronic care.
Right.
Because to me, for acute problems, that's why you had the AAA insurance for a car accident.
Right.
Or I have a 16-year-old son that played soccer and tore his ACL. And that surgery is a miracle of modern science.
Right.
So that part I do want. And if I have kids, I might want to have that type of insurance for that piece of the healthcare. For chronic, I have no interest in chronic care from the established medical system.
Right.
So that's the way I personally look at it, because I, you know, with a family and stuff, then you have to, you may have different risks like that where you have to pay attention to kids getting injured and things like that, or yourself.
So we, Jennifer Walters does our hosts our health series, and she's a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And she's done a great deal to understand what can I get from the establishment healthcare that I need,
mm-hmm.
and want,
mm-hmm.
and how do I get it without also getting murdered?
Yeah, yes.
So how do I navigate? And we've had her and Matt Hale, who's an attorney, on talking mm-hmm. about how to navigate that system and not get killed, and get all the good in that system that there is, and then how to get, you know, to go outside that system and get all the benefits there.
Yeah.
Because the best health is when you integrate your nutrition with your preventative health care, with what you can get from
take it. The good and leave the bad in every system, including right. the established one.
Right.
Because there is a piece of that you might want.
The hard part of that is that's a major job in terms
yeah.
of getting the knowledge and the intellectual mastery you need.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's funny, because of being an investment advisor, I spent years reading about health. And so I would have friends who would come and say, I've just been diagnosed with cancer. And I could literally save them 10 years of research. I said, get this, read this, do this, you know, and send them right to the specific things they needed, because they didn't have the time to mm-hmm. do the research. Anyway, so the idea, we're working on learning plans for the Building Wealth curriculum. The idea that I have to, like, be my own doctor or my own nurse, that's daunting if you're someone like me.
Yeah.
And yet.
It's interesting. I got a call from a company that does health. They're like, they make the decisions for wealthy people, and they charge a lot of money. They call it the black card of healthcare. But I started talking to the person, and I started asking them about non-traditional approaches to things like cancer, and the guy was kind of poo-pooing it. So even people, don't assume that people who are wealthy get
good
care.
They don't know.
They don't know.
They don't know. Oh, it's frightening.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
Yeah.
It's frightening. To a certain extent, when I got booted out of the establishment, I felt like that landed me amongst a group of people who have all this secret, sacred knowledge, which I would never have had access to if I hadn't gotten booted.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting.
And I've always heard the saying, I don't know, maybe you can comment because you spend time in Europe, which is that Europeans spend half the amount on healthcare and double the amount on food, and we're
right.
the reverse in the United States.
Right.
Is that
right? And they're much healthier.
Yeah.
Right. It's amazing. I used to have, I think I told you this, I had one person say, well, my financial planner says that unless I have $25 million at least in my brokerage and money management accounts, you know, I don't have enough for retirement, so I can't afford to buy organic food.
That's crazy.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, anything you want to say about dental?
Dental, a lot of times, is outside of, it's a separate coverage that you have
right.
to evaluate, and for a long time, dental was outside of insurance. In the last 10 years, I'd say it's been more common to have certain companies offer coverage. But then when you look at that and you go to maybe even your dentist who you've been going to for a long time, they said, we don't take that insurance.
Right.
And so if you go through the dental insurance, you're going to a different type of dental practice. You know, you can evaluate the quality. I would say it's a lower quality.
Right.
So again, it's quality matters and everything. You get what you pay for, but sometimes even in dental, even though now they offer insurance, or the things with eyeglasses and things, sometimes it pays to not have that and just right. pay out of pocket.
So I'm in the Netherlands system,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in the U.S.
Okay,
I'm in multiple systems, but I often I've studied sort of what's available internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you magazines like International Living will spend a lot of time covering what the sort of the medical systems are in other countries. I find there are so many countries where the options are much better than here.
Yeah.
And if you look at the national systems, you know, they offer things that really are much higher quality in terms of the economics of what's available through the insurance plan and the quality of what's available, including alternative.
Yeah.
So, I've known people who, when they lost their corporate insurance, literally moved abroad until they could get Medicare. And they will literally say, okay, from the age of this to this, I'm going to live abroad just because I know I'm not covered in the U.S. adequately. Mm-hmm.
And even now I see people, there are holistic dentists or things like they're called biologic dentists where they pay attention to mercury exposure and fillings and how to remove a filling so that you don't
right.
inhale mercury. So there's a whole world out there, and it's growing. There are more and more people are available.
Right.
It's cash. Yes.
It's cash. Yes. It's cash. And you got to get over that.
You do.
You got to get over it and say, okay, I'm going to pay cash for healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Okay, so this is one of my favorite topics. We're going to turn to disability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I remember in 1997 or 98 when I let it go,
mm-hmm.
I was paying, I think, $8,500 a year for disability and had for more than a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And then I let it go, which was like, wow, can I live without my disability insurance? Mm-hmm. Wow. And I think of what I could have done with that. You know, because I think I spent about $100,000 on disability insurance, and if I had instead invested it wisely.
Yes, yes, but I even saw recently, I mean, if you're going to take that approach, it's because you're taking responsibility for your own decisions.
Right.
I saw recently the commenter Ed Dowd talking about how disability claims are going way up, and he uses the St. Louis Fed database.
Right.
So those people who are on that part of the upswing there, most likely haven't been taking responsibility for their own decisions, and then that's the result.
Right. Now, I was a very high-income person, which is why one of the reasons it was so expensive, because they were really going to replace a significant amount of my income.
Yeah.
But if you're responsible for two kids and a family,
and people in professions, you know, specific things like surgeons and things, or even I have it but I buy it through a professional organization.
Right.
So if you don't have it, you know, they say when they sell it, they say that you're more likely to be disabled than to die. So you're more likely to need disability insurance than life insurance.
Right.
And many people in companies, certainly larger companies, are provided disability. They provide short-term disability just to cover themselves as the company.
Right.
And a lot of times it's not even on your pay stub.
Right.
So unless you go read the documents, they give you all these documents when you start working. Unless you read all that, people don't even realize they have it.
Right.
And then they offer long-term disability. But sometimes people in the middle that work for smaller companies
right.
that may not think about it, you know, but the thing about it is when you buy it, it is expensive.
So my focus is always, you know, from the, say, 2000 on, my focus has always been on investing and making sure that you're doing the things that will keep you from becoming disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really focused on preventative because I find that's your best, for me, that's your best risk equation.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I had kids, I would, you know, it would be different.
And even the thing where you talk about catastrophic car accident, you could get in a car accident and live
right.
and be disabled.
Right.
So
there you go.
There's some aspect to that.
So one thing you can do, of course, is if you're saving, if you're taking, making the effort to significantly save in a way where you control the savings over time, that money can grow to a level where you can care for yourself.
And you could even look at that on disability policies. They don't pay out 100% of your income. They pay out generally 60, at the most 70%, because disability insurance is received tax-free as long as you don't deduct it when you're paying the bill.
Right.
And that's an important thing for people. Most companies will force you not to deduct it, so
right,
that if you ever get it, it'll be tax-free. But it's the same thing like with Social Security and stuff. It's assuming on disability that you're going to get it tax-free.
Right.
But you can calculate that. So it'll say it will pay 60% for two years or 3 years with a 6-month exclusion period where it doesn't pay yet until you're disabled. And you can calculate the dollar value of that.
Right.
And then you could say, okay, I'm saving. If I save $8,500 a year, how long is it going to take me to save and invest that pot,
right,
that I would have gotten on disability insurance?
Right.
Because it's not unlimited.
Right. So that's the risk bet.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to make that personally yourself. No
mm-hmm.
one else can make it for
yeah.
you. So disability, when I first got disability insurance, it wasn't a widely practiced thing in my experience. You know, everybody on Wall Street was just, I'm going to make $100 million
yeah.
and I won't have
forever,
to think about that.
Fine.
Right. But when I became really aware of disability insurance was when I lived in a community where instead of giving people unemployment, a process began where they just moved everybody to Social Security disability,
mm-hmm.
including kids.
Yeah.
And there was a real series of systemic policies that were frightening because they put everybody on a healthcare treadmill where they wanted to be deemed to be sick.
Mm-hmm.
It was frightening. It was sort of like paying people to adopt a victim mentality and be permanently sick because then they could get
yeah.
disability. And you entered into a world where a lot of people were on disability insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about Social Security disability for the Americans.
Yeah, so for Social Security disability, Social Security disability assumes that you have some work record. So, and For people that are older, it's 40 quarters. It's 10 years of work. There's a sliding scale when you're younger than that. And if you're a child and you're disabled, age 21 or earlier, then you can qualify. But it's also, I've seen it where it's not necessarily easy to qualify for disability, SSDI. It's a process. I know one individual who's not a wealthy person who had... He was disabled. He was struggling. He couldn't work. He applied. They kept denying him. 3 months later, he died.
Right.
So it wasn't like he was lying.
Right.
But they kept denying him, you know?
Right.
So those things, and I've also seen the case with somebody who was homeless, who was mentally ill, who went mentally ill at age 20 and got to age 65, and he was still alive out on the streets in Philadelphia and was not eligible because he never worked.
Right.
So... There's a work component. If you're a child, you have your parents' insurance, and there's a sliding scale there, but
it's not
simple to navigate that.
Right, it's very hard to navigate, and it's also, you know, if you pull money from that system, a family or an estate at death can have it drawn back. In other words, you could end up liable to the system.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah. I think if you have extra money, right?
Right.
If you have money outside of SSD, out of disability, it can be
right.
clawed back.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So let's talk. Anything you want to say about Social Security while we're here?
Just that those programs are not fully funded, and you can look at government sources for that. If you look at, you know, how long will my Social Security last? You can put that into Google and look for the documents. Currently, it says that it'll pay 80 cents on the dollar starting in 2034.
So you gave me, I hadn't seen this. You
yeah.
gave me a printout showing how from 2010 to currently, the percent of benefits available projected is going up as the life expectancy goes down.
Right. And I tell people that. I think there's some, I don't know the percentage, it's something like 40%, maybe it's a little higher, of Americans who will only have Social Security when they stop working. And if you cut, if you take a $2,000 a month payment and you cut that to $1,600, that's a big impact, especially right. when we have inflation going on with food and these other things. So at least be aware of it, because if that did happen, it will affect people, not just people like me who have not claimed it. It will affect people who have been on claim for 15 years.
Right.
So it's just, I wouldn't get worked, you know, you don't, it's not an immediate problem, but just be, I guess, be aware of it. But the interesting thing is they're getting closer to fully fund it as life expectancy goes down.
Right. Well, I would say it another way. If you look at all the things converging to make retirement financially challenging,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's many different things. You need to be able to look at all of them, and you need to be able to manage these different pieces to handle your risk. And it's not something, it's not something quick. It's not something easy. It's not something you can delegate. You have to take full responsibility.
You do, and it's a lot of it is beyond simply looking at your investment portfolio.
Right, right. I don't know. I think, you know, because it's funny, you have an extraordinary intellectual mastery about all these different areas, but I know you've been working on this for a long, long time. And
it started with doing it for me and my family.
I know. That's where it
started. But just wanting to make sure that we were covered and not just, I said, well, let's learn about this. What about these other things that are not covered?
Right, right. So it's a full integration.
Yeah.
But I will say this, it's chilling looking at the percent of benefits go up as life expectancy goes down.
Yes.
And, you know, I hate to say this, when the budget deal busted, I said, look, the only way they can break even, you know, if you can't change the savings rate, you have to delay the retirement age or lower life expectancy. But if you looked at the numbers, it had to be lower life expectancy.
Yeah.
And that's what they immediately started to do.
I always tell people there's a former Senator Ken Conrad who works on these issues. And he said repeatedly that each side of the political aisle has a certain set of solutions to fix Social Security. Neither one of those on its own is enough to fix what is a big math problem.
Right.
You need all of the solutions. And then you can ask yourself, what's the likelihood that Congress will work together over the next 10 years?
Zero.
Right.
Right. So, okay. So let's talk about long-term care, because I used to have long-term care insurance, but I never believed in it because the industry never looked like it made economic sense.
Mm-hmm. It did years ago. It was underpriced at the beginning.
Yeah,
It was too cheap. Yeah.
And in fact, in New York, when you got that huge wave of deaths in 2020,
mm-hmm.
The year before, the bankruptcy trajectory of life long-term care in New York was just, I looked at the numbers mm-hmm. and it was like,
yeah.
you know, this was an industry that was going to go bankrupt if things didn't change.
They've since raised the premiums, especially for women, and they can't raise it on a person individually. They can raise it at a class level, like all 50 to 55-year-old women in Pennsylvania, and they have to go to the insurance board. But they've been allowing them to raise the premiums because the projections they originally did were not accurate. They under predicted the cost.
Well, would you do long-term care? I mean, I don't touch it.
No, the only people I say it's appropriate for are people who are 65
right.
or older in good health and then have some middle amount of money. You don't have so much you can self-insure and you don't have so little that you have bigger fish to fry.
Right.
And you're in there and then maybe on top of that, you also have a family history of neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and that kind of thing. And maybe that's the case.
Right.
But you got to look at it and understand it's going to be expensive. And then you have to look at,
well, if you spent that money on taking care of, you know, on really investing in your health,
mm-hmm. yes.
that's the trade-off,
yes.
which is better.
Yeah.
Okay. Homeowners. This is a favorite of mine. So
yeah.
I've always had excellent experience with my homeowners mm-hmm. insurance. But I've seen a lot of people who've had an excellent experience with their homeowner insurance.
Yeah.
So talk to me about homeowner insurance.
Yeah. So I think understand that you can ask for different things to be adjusted on there. Like the lower the premium, the lower deductible that you have,
right,
then the more you get nickeled and dimed and the higher your cost is.
Right.
So if one way to reduce cost is to raise the deductible, and then that goes together with having an appropriate cash balance,
right,
for you. Whatever, it doesn't have to be, it's different for every person, but holding enough cash is important in the insurance broad picture, because it allows you to pay for deductibles, other things like that, or food, you know, the health that you're investing in instead of healthcare, all
right.
These things. Remember that that cash plays a role in that. Then also, you know, you want to look at your coverage, and you can ask your agent to do a replacement value calculation, because you don't have to cover the land. You don't have to insure
right.
the land.
Right.
And so just, it's a way to kind of get, start learning about this and understand the levers you can pull and push to change the price of the insurance. Now, another thing that I tell people to do is go around your house and take pictures mm-hmm. and save them.
Archiving is
because
so right.
if you ever go through a loss situation, like look at these people in Florida that go through hurricanes and things, then you become at odds with your insurance company, where they're not, you know, if you can't prove everything in there, they're going to assume that you had the minimum
right.
when they're reimbursing you.
Right.
So it's a way to stand up for yourself. If you just spend the time to go around and take a picture of everything, document it, keep it somewhere where it doesn't disappear in a
right.
fire or hurricane.
You need multiple copies
multiple
in different
backups.
Places.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So we have an article on archiving
mm-hmm.
that, and I keep stressing to people,
yeah.
you know, and it was really interesting. In Katrina, the people who came back fast were the people who knew to have copies of their policies somewhere
yeah.
other than their house, because they'd been through it before.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come, you know, they'd have all their documents, they'd get it in, and they'd get their money immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very important. It's
right.
You can keep pushing it off, but it's important to do.
Right. So I find there's wide variation in the insurance companies that are honorable and will pay and,
mm-hmm.
and pay quickly and in full, and those who don't.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another area where quality is critical.
It is. And, you know, I've personally found better experience working with a local broker who looks at different companies. It's not always true, because sometimes you get a broker that's kind of going to rake you over the coals. Or you could get somebody that's at a captive agent, but they're, you know, they're with Farmers Insurance or State or whatever. State Farm is another story with the, they're kind of like the J.P. Morgan of insurance, I think.
Right.
But you have to look at that. And I'd say just be open to the fact that it's not a one size fits all. In some cases, I personally found better experience with a local broker who looked at all the companies and weighed everything. But in some cases, it might be better to just go with a local agent. Maybe it's been there for 40 years. They're in the community. They're an honest broker, and they're going to tell you the real deal. So
one of my biggest problems with homeowners insurance is I don't trust the insurance companies with data.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they're
yes.
So and that comes down to two issues. It comes down to there's certain things I have in my home that I don't insure because I don't want them to know I have them in my
home. That's another thing, yes.
I don't want to put them on the policy.
Yeah.
If you put them on the policy, you've got a much greater chance of getting robbed than if you don't put them on
yes.
the policy. Right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Think about that also. What data are you disclosing? And
where's that data going to go? Because
yes.
I don't trust them as far as I
yeah.
can throw them
yeah.
with the data.
Yes.
Okay. So that's number one. Number two, and this comes more with a business insurance, is they reserve the right. Okay, you have to put this technology, you know, fire and system, and suddenly you got a surveillance device in the hall,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's providing data to your worst enemy.
And I've done this recently where they offered to give me a discount on my homeowners if I would put in like a Nest camera and all this. And I said, no thanks. I'll pay the higher price.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, it's the same thing with the, you know, where you have an opt-out program for the smart meter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, pay the higher price.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't. And I just, I find their invasiveness that way to be deeply offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on homeowners? I think part of what we're saying is know what you're insuring again. So You're insuring against fire. You're not insuring against, you know, a little piece of the roof being broken off by a bad storm. You can fix that yourself.
Yeah. One thing to just remember that many people don't think about with homeowners is liability insurance, which is general liability. And you use the case like if somebody slips on your walk and sues you.
Right.
But it's important to remember that in today's world, depending on where you live and who you have coming to your house and this type of thing. And that'll go together with something later called an umbrella policy, which is talking about general liability and preparing that if you were sued to not lose all your assets.
So you can get that with a homeowner's, but you can also get it separate.
Yes. The umbrella policy. So typically what happens, like your homeowners might have 100,000 per instance and 300,000 overall liability. And then there's an umbrella policy that you can buy that's separate. And it's sold in blocks of a million. It's inexpensive. But in order for that policy to take effect, you have to have an underlying policy in place.
Right.
So it only works if you have the underlying policy in place. And that's why it's usually sold by the same insurance company. So to make sure that whatever the requirements are of that general liability policy, that you have the requisite insurance underneath it.
So you want general liability?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And I'd say at least, you know, you could be sued if you get sued like Alex Jones for trillions of dollars. And that's beyond the pale. But I'd say at least one times your net worth, whatever your net worth is.
Right, but I'm assuming for that kind of lawsuit, you're talking about E&O insurance, errors and omissions insurance, business insurance.
For an Alex Jones type thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Would general liability ever cover that?
No.
No.
No. That's it. Maybe a different, maybe I shouldn't use that as an example.
Okay.
But I'd say the main thing, if you have your value of your investments and your house and stuff, you add that up, you probably want to have liability at least to cover that, so that if you got sued for half of that in an insurance situation and you lost the case, that it doesn't decimate your personal, you know, financial situation.
So, you know, even though it's not personal insurance, I'll just jump to E&O for a second, because I spent a fortune when I was litigating. I had a very good E&O policy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I had done the E&O policy with an insurance company, I would say, who is a criminal enterprise.
Yeah.
And I had to spend, over the course of the litigation, a great deal of money to pay an insurance attorney to police them and to teach me how to police them and to teach me what insurance law said about what they could and could not do. And I had to get intellectual mastery of how to manage a criminal insurance company.
Yeah.
And it was quite an education. But
that's like on steroids, the people in Florida where the insurance company's working against you for your house. That's your situation.
Yeah, they're trying.
Yeah.
Exactly. So now were they were they holding the mortgage or were they the homeowner's insurance?
Who?
The Florida situation.
I think it was just the homeowner's insurance.
Really?
But that was the case. That was just where I said with the document your house, because they're not gonna fully cover everything that you lost, unless you document it.
So I know one time I talked to a mortgage broker about refinancing my mortgage on my house in Tennessee. And I'm trying to remember how I found out about it, but I found out they had called up and transferred my insurance to them, even though I'd never done a mortgage deal with them.
Yeah.
And I had to get a transfer back.
Even that process of selling mortgages to a different servicer is just fraught with nonsense. Like moving the escrow and stuff, like I've done it. I have to call them up and say, where do I send this? We're going to get it. No, you're not. Like I'm sending it to you. I want a record that I sent you the escrow. Or you could say I don't have escrow, but even paying the bill when they service it and they switch, there's like a law that says they have to tell you 10 days ahead, but they don't have to give you access to new account until the day of the switch. And then the payment is due on that day. And if you pay like 3 days later, you owe a late fee. And it just is, it's such a dishonest process.
Right. Well, that's why, you know, I've been blessed because in Tennessee, I for my insurance, homeowners and auto, great.
Yes.
Yeah. I got no complaints. Mm-hmm. And you've got an insurance company where the members can be stockholders, mm-hmm. and you know, they're just faithful.
Yeah.
But when you get into these situations with insurance companies where every day they can delay paying you, they make more money.
Yeah.
And they're owned by a private equity firm, and it's a war.
Yeah, it is.
It's horrible. And
I guess a best practice, if you could do it, is just keep your insurance, keep your tax bills out. Don't escrow them, because then it's just one less thing
right.
to have to fool with them about.
Right. Okay, so one of my favorites is auto, because I travel by car a lot.
Yes.
And I've spent a lot of, you know, all those courses you have to take if you get a speeding ticket, but you're trying not to get your points.
Yeah.
So I've taken a lot of those courses, and the troopers always talk about insurance, mm-hmm. and that's where I've gotten my best lessons in auto insurance. So let's talk about auto insurance.
So it's a similar thing as far as deductibles, that if you have a higher deductible, it's going to be a lower cost.
Right.
One thing to be aware of is that in today's world, fender benders, if you happen to have a fender bender against a more expensive car, you'll be shocked at how much that costs to replace it.
Right.
Because of all the technology under the bumper and all this
right.
kind of thing.
Right.
And so just think about that when if you're choosing a deductible and you say, well, $500, I could do $2,500. People might choose that. And then when they get hit with the bill, they had a little scratch in the fender. It cost me $2,500 and they're shocked by it. So
I think on insurance, auto insurance, one of the most important is liability to the other parties for these catastrophic accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have millions of dollars of health care and disability, and they come after you, and your policy only covers you up for $250 or so, and then suddenly you've got general liability for the rest.
So that's where, in that particular case, that's where the umbrella comes in.
Right.
So that umbrella covers both auto and homeowners. It stands on top of the liability
right.
of both of those. It's inexpensive, and I would recommend people look at that because it plans for that type of situation.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, anything on the quality of providers? Because it is...
You can look at ratings of companies. So you do, I think, want to make sure that you have a company that's higher quality, which means they're better funded to cover all their potential claims.
Right.
And really, I think when you're looking at that, you care about the case where your company individually would have issues, but the companies around them don't. If you have a wholesale thing because the process for that is usually it's anything that the insurance company can't pay, if they're not a good quality company, it gets split out among the other companies in the state.
Right.
And so if you talk to an insurance person, you say, well, what about if this company is not quality? They'll say it'll just get split out in these other companies. And that is true. But you probably would rather not go through that process, I would think.
Right.
And that's why if you get a look at quality, look at their rating companies like AM Best and things that you can look at their website and see ratings of insurance companies.
So all my insurance comes through brokers that I know and trust.
Mm-hmm.
And they're people I can go talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And they're people known in the community. So... You know, if they did something horrible to me, everybody else would know.
That's the easiest, best way to do it. If you have people that you know and trust, that they're accountable to you
right.
because of the relationships.
Right.
That's the simplest thing. Then you'd have to know, oh, what is that thing called? AM Best? I don't know. Let them worry about it.
Right.
But know that they want to give you a real answer.
So when it comes to all of these different things, I want a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have a relationship with another human being who I know
mm-hmm.
and who's known by me and other people I know.
Yeah.
And they can advise me on what I get. And they can, if there's a problem, I have a human I can
mm-hmm.
go to.
Yeah.
Now, I keep being told that somebody got their auto insurance online, and I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing that.
Yeah, that your method there is a very easy way for many, many people to operate because it's based on
relationships. Right.
Now, that's probably the simplest thing to do.
Is the online purchasing for things like auto and home going up?
I think maybe for people that are more tech focused, more
right.
into the tech world, they just do everything online and they do it online.
And I should say there are things I'm happy to get online.
Yes.
That's just not one of them.
Yes. I mean, most property and casualty, autos and homeowners, there's still local agents They still are in a physical office. They still, and I got.
And they're still available to provide you with an education.
Yeah.
Okay. 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 So we talked about umbrella. Anything else you want to say about umbrella?
No. Just realize, like I said, it's not expensive. It's not expensive.
Right.
And it will cover the case where you got sued, general liability, for something stupid that happened, and you ended up losing, and then you just don't decimate your entire financial picture.
Right. Right. Okay, now cash is part of an insurance plan.
Yeah, it makes things smooth. When you don't have cash and you have an emergency,
right?
If you have no money, that's how you end up going down the credit card road,
right?
And getting behind the eight ball. So, and it's not easy for people that don't have a lot of money to just build cash. It's not easy to do. But I'd say focus on that, because it's not just for insurance, it's part of financial health.
Right.
If you have some core piece of cash that you can use to fill the gaps, and when things pop up, okay, I might get reimbursed from insurance, but I need to outlay the money now. It really helps to
give you... the things that pop up, you know, in the current environment are growing dramatically.
Yeah.
So
it just gives you the ability to respond to things without having the extra stress of saying, where's the money coming from? When you're already in a stressful, you've never been in a car accident or whatever, and you're under stress, it's just one less thing to be stressed about.
Right, right.
But you have to think about it ahead of time and set it up and then dedicate yourself to maintaining it as part of the overall
plan. Now, I would say part of it is not just cash, but cash at home and cash in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So I want, you know.
Yeah, have a safe at home and have cash at home.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if you saw, did you see the governor at the Bank of New Zealand after the cyclone? He said, thank God we had cash. You know what would have happened if we didn't have cash? I said, well, that guy clearly didn't get the memo.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't see that, but that's interesting.
And I don't know if you saw the hero of the week this week on the Solari report.
I don't know if I did.
It's the former governor of the Bank of England who has come out and said, you know, CBDC, what he calls it, Britcoin, which is the British version, is a solution for which there is no problem.
It's shockingly honest.
Well, the quote we used from him is, he said, you know, if a French prime minister wants to pay his minister a small amount of money and that information goes immediately to the CIA, that is not a way to run an international payment system.
Yeah. Not to go too much off track, but that's the thing right now with the 1099s, with all these electronic systems like Venmo, PayPal, all that stuff. At the end of this year, if they don't put it on hold again, next year people are going to get 1099s for all you sent your daughter Venmo and you sent this and that. And we'll see what happens. But I would anticipate you're going to see a barrage of 1099s, and then people won't know what to do with it.
And it's for any amount over 600?
Yes. It was put in place for 2022, then it was put on hold because there was going to be confusion. And now, as far as I'm aware, it's in place for 2023.
Now, it's on one payment or accumulated payments?
I don't know if that's clear in the wording.
Okay.
I think it can be both. But it's not clearly stated in what I've read.
Right. Oh, boy. So that's why we're so glad about this announcement that the IRS can't just show up uninvited without a warrant.
Yes.
Right. You want to tell us about that?
So the IRS this week announced that they're going to reduce. They said they're not going to, when you look at the fine print, they're not eliminating people showing up at the door, but they're going to reduce IRS employees showing up at the door. And what we're talking about then is they have two groups of people who would come to your door. One is called a revenue officer, and they're like a debt collector, and they would come, and I think most recently there's a reporter who released the Twitter files and then had the IRS show up at his door, and they had congressional hearings about it. But that type of, that's what they're talking about, that type of person showing up less often, much less often. And then they have the criminal investigators, the special agents. Those are the only guys who carry weapons, and they are hiring. You can see them hiring on the Fed hiring database all around the country. So that's not changing with them. It's just the people who would go and knock on your door and say, hey, we need to talk to you, the revenue officer. They're reducing it. And so you have to ask yourself why.
I was doing an interview about 2 weeks ago, and the guy who was doing the interview runs a retail shop in Shelbyville, and he had just gotten the new census, and he said it's the most invasive thing you could imagine. It's even worse than the last one. I hadn't looked at it yet. And so I talked to him and I said, you know, several times we've written articles about the census, particularly for business, mm-hmm. and what the rules are and how the regs yeah. work, et cetera, because they keep getting more and more invasive. And so we discussed that. A week later, I get an email from my bookkeeper saying, we just received two census. Here they are. I haven't had a chance to look at them. We will upgrade that. But I know that if you look at the process by which state and local and federal government is asking for every drop of data. Somebody just posted...
Technocracy, right? Or like you right. call it the database.
Right.
Just keep feeding it.
Somebody just posted at Solari and said, you know, I was talking to a bookkeeper in New York, and she literally, they want to know the names of the books on the shelf in the business.
And it's crazy.
I mean, it's...
Yeah. It's not crazy. It's crazy like a fox, right? It's intentional.
Well, but here, this used to happen to me with government because I saw when I worked at HUD how insecure the data was that government collected. Mm. So for the, you know what an FBAR form is.
Yes.
Right. So I have to file an FBAR form because I have foreign accounts. But what I would always tell my clients when I was an investment advisor is, you know, they would have digital gold accounts. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, on the FBAR, give them the last four numbers, you know, so they have the name of the account and they have the last four numbers. And if they need to go to the digital gold provider with that, they can always find your account and it's fully disclosed. Do not give them the full number because, you know, the gold could disappear out of the account.
Yeah.
It's not
that, that's a big issue, not just with digital gold, but with digital yeah. currency.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, I'm not the only person who've ever asked this, but I asked an IRS representative a couple months ago at a meeting, where is cryptocurrency domiciled? Because it matters for an FBAR.
Right.
So the FBAR is the form you have to file if you have more than $10,000 outside the country. If you have an online, if you have a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and where is that? Is it on a server in Sweden? Is it in the US? Where is it?
Right.
And how are you going to determine whether you have to file an FBAR or not?
What did he say?
They said it's under review. They had no answer. That's what they said.
Well, but if you look at the penalties for not following an FBAR.
There was also a recent big case where the IRS lost because they said, they used to say, I think it was $50,000 per occurrence. And there was a wealthy businessman that had hundreds of accounts and they tried to fine him like $10 million. And they went, I think it went to the Supreme Court and they said no, one per instance. So they cut his fine from like $5 million to $50,000.
Right.
Because it was 1 year. It wasn't, but not on $50,000 for every account of 200.
So one, because Australia, in my experience, is often the leader of new regulation. You know, they do it there uh-huh. first and
yeah.
then we, you know, it comes here. But if you look at the regulations they were putting in about what you had to keep in terms of records for crypto, mm-hmm. and you had to be able to document what the market was at each trade. So if you're a CPA, you are legally liable to have documentation on the market for each trade, you know, and you get somebody who's doing a lot of trading, you know, the easiest thing to do is kick them out of your CPA. It's just like, I don't
know. I'll tell you what I do. There's I won't say what name is, but there's a service that offers to track it all and we give you the report that has to go on the taxes. And I tell people I'm not doing it, but if you insist on doing it, you have to use that.
Right.
Because and then if the answer is, well, I don't want to do digital, well then what are you doing with crypto?
Right.
So if you're going to do digital, I won't throw you out, but you must use that because if you're going to be trading in and out, all this stuff, I'm not spending all the time to do that.
Right.
So we'll just use that system, give me the report and I can
right.
do that. But that's my limit.
Right. It's you know, with any new or insecure market, mm-hmm. it's you always have these issues, and
yeah.
that's one of the. I mean, I'm different because, you know, I lived through 11 years of the feds trying to falsify offshore accounts and saying I had offshore accounts when I didn't have offshore accounts. And if you think they can do that with the U.S. banking system, wait, you see what they can do with crypto.
Oh, yeah, beyond steroids.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we change, this has been very, very helpful. Anything else on insurance we want to talk about?
No, I think just like we've said throughout the discussion, take ownership, get involved, and then I like your method of finding local people who can be accountable,
right,
and use that to help you take charge.
Right. One of the things that always helped me was I worked with a financial planner once, you know, as a professional, mm-hmm. who was great at finding all the statistics and what is the statistical chance you will fall in the bathtub and hurt yourself?
Yeah.
What is the chance you'll mm-hmm. have a car accident? What is the chance, you know,
yeah.
he had all the statistics of mm-hmm. life in the United States of America, and he had some other countries too.
Yeah.
And you could literally see, okay, what is the chance I'm going to have a car accident? Mm-hmm. What is the chance, you know, and you could, what is the chance somebody's going to slip in my driveway and sue me?
Yeah.
And that always helped me to sort of face the risks. Do you mm-hmm. know where we can find those statistics?
I don't.
Okay.
But I will say, I commonly ask, like, if I get, if I buy a car and they offer me a warranty, I ask for the warranty because I use the pricing of that as a representative, like as an idea or proxy for what it will cost the insurance company on average for my car to repair it, plus a profit motive.
Right.
So then I just say, well, can I afford to self-pay that
right.
or not? But it gives me information just in the price.
Right. So the other thing I have to say is when you have a society going through a lot of change or under a lot of stress or, corruption going up, mm-hmm. these things in combination dramatically increase risk.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. I drove on this trip from Charleston to Memphis, and then I drove from Memphis to Knoxville. And if you look at how long it was supposed to take from Memphis to Knoxville, it took me 3 hours longer because there were so many accidents on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And these weren't just two people bumping into each other and having an accident. This is like a pancake of 14 cars happening several times. And since the pandemic, since the injection started, if you look at the number of traffic accidents and fatalities, it's rising.
I'm sure.
So risk in the general environment is going up.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that makes insurance even more important.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree.
Right. And it also makes it more important to sit back and look at all your risk and how you're managing your risk and say, you know, proactively, what's the best way to do this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I want to change when and how I drive? Do I want to, you know, so, you know, I'm always telling people, you don't need an investment strategy, you need a war strategy.
Yeah.
And I feel that way because I really feel that the risk, I've had more people report that they or someone they know was in a car accident and the other guy didn't have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
And there's so, it's not even just the health issues. It's even just things like phones. People looking at their phones while they're driving.
Right.
I've seen people on the phone and I assume that they're a drunk driver and I drive next to them. They're just looking at a phone.
Wow.
They appear the same from behind. They're weaving.
Right.
It's crazy.
Okay. Okay. So now let's just turn a little bit on the market. So once again, we started the year and I had to listen to how the world was going to collapse and the dollar was going to collapse mm-hmm. and the stock market was going to collapse.
Yeah.
And of course it didn't happen mm-hmm. as usual.
Yeah.
But we have seen a very unusual market. I would say the market is rewarding people who are promoting control. So if you're engineering control, if you're building the smart grid, you know, it's the big tech. It's been going.
Those are the winners, and the rest of them are not. They're right. lagging, first of all.
Right. right. Well, it's, you know, for yeah. us, it's horrible because, you know, everybody else is flat.
Mm-hmm.
And so also in our fund, we write hedges. So,
yeah.
And the hedges don't help in this environment.
Right.
Right. So you're
moving sideways, the hedge isn't helping.
Yeah.
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 And but then you look at a headline index, and it's through the roof, and it's driven by a handful of companies.
Right. Who I don't want to touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah.
So.
But when I see a line that goes straight up like this, to me, that's not long-term sustainable.
Right.
We could argue about the reasons for that. And I think we're in an interesting environment because I can read market commentators and there's not even a clear consensus. It's very confused. Some
right.
people say we're shorting the market. Some people say we're buying. So, and it's just very discombobulated, and it's
well,
and it's very volatile.
The commentary doesn't fit with reality.
No.
So reality's over here. Official reality is over here. It's hard. It's very hard for people to make sense, and that's of concern to me, because I keep watching. We've been really fighting at Solaria, trying to talk people out of getting scammed by precious metals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can't trust the stock market. You can't trust the economy. Everything's going to fall. You know, get very afraid, and then come over here, and here's how you protect yourself, which, of course, is worse than where you were.
You're out of the pot. You could be out of the pot into the fire.
Right. And, in fact, last night I went in and I checked. Somebody had put a video that we did up on Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
So it was another show. They put, no, I'm sorry. It was a Solaria report.
Okay.
We did an interview with Naomi Wolf, which was very popular.
Yeah.
We put it up on Rumble, and it's got an ad for this precious metal IRA. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Right. And so the question is, how are we going to get that taken down?
Yeah. I'd say to me, the way that I suggest people manage when it's discombobulated, when it's there's a reality, there's not reality, I don't know what's going on, is to try to bring it back to your individual situation.
Right.
And think about what matters to you. Okay, some aspect of that might be in the stock market that's going like this, but what about the other aspects? And remind yourself of the full picture that you have, including your family and the people that you love and your situation. And just try not to live in all cases, if you cannot live in fear,
right.
It's to your benefit.
Right. So we did, we're going to redo, I did something on Financial Rebellion called Where to Stash Your Cash in 2022,
mm-hmm.
which was wildly popular.
Mm-hmm.
So Karen and I are going to go do it again, but we're going to walk through all the different, you know, 30 plus.
Yeah.
And there are millions of places to invest, but they all, you're right, they all come back to me, my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's back to getting intellectual mastery yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we're all going to have to be...
you even have the to cash, have, right? Even with our recent experience with bank crises that you talk about with John and all this stuff, people get fearful about cash and then start considering things that are really not the best. So
can I bring up something?
Sure.
I didn't... So this situation where we keep finding people who get into trouble because J.P. Morgan Chase or another bank engages in what I would describe as corrupt practices.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they've known for 20 years that that bank behaves that way, but still they're in that bank.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is why? Why can't we go find... Now...
I think a lot of it is inertia. When you are... Like, people have inertia. They don't want to switch. They think it's going to be hard. And you could tell them until you're blue in the face, like, okay, yeah. And they just leave it there. It's like they don't.
It's like not realizing who the beneficiary is on your policy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think part of it is saying, okay, I have a time budget, and sometime I'm going to spend to proactively manage my resources, my financial life.
Also to do things in pieces. So say, okay, I have all my accounts at JPMorgan Chase. I've had it there forever. I don't want to have to switch everything. Well, don't switch everything. Just
get a new account.
Get a new account. Get
right.
started. Put a little money in there. You start using it. And you do it in steps. You don't just go, I have to do everything all at once. Because then
right.
it's more
That's
of a...
That's impossible.
Yeah.
Right. So I always tell people, and I always like to have more than two.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so have several accounts. So
yeah.
if you have to switch. But I think what I've heard, and I've heard this from multiple people in the last 3 to 6 months is, oh... It will inevitably go, they want to consolidate into 6 banks, and they will do that, and there's nothing I can do. So I need to be in one of those 6 banks now because it's inevitable they go into them. And if I go to a small bank, it'll just go down or whatever. And, you know, and so there's this program that says it's all inevitable that they succeed in consolidating into 6 banks, whatever. And I'm like,
yeah, it's... Yeah, I would totally give voice to you and John that say the local banks are not at risk.
Right.
The reason that you want to be at the local bank is because they're lending in your local community to your neighbors, to the people you do business with, and you can look at them and look at their quality. But if they're good quality, they don't have derivatives on the balance sheet. They don't have all the stuff. They're not going out of business.
Well, but the other thing is, there was an article about somebody got thrown out. He had had an identity theft problem, which he reported to the FBI.
Okay.
And then I think it was Bank of America threw him out because there was an FBI broadcast with his name in it. And so they froze him because they didn't know him. There was no relationship.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, and that's why I say you don't need a local bank or a big bank. You need a good bank.
Yeah.
And a good bank is a bank who knows you and doesn't throw you out because of some software glitch.
Well, even those big banks, I've banked with them over the years. In today's world, they get away from having a teller anymore.
Right.
The person, if you go in and there's a person, it'll switch week to week. If you go to a local bank, just know the. Oh, there's Mary. I see her every time I come in. I talk with her about something other than banking once in a while.
Right.
And so that if there's a problem, say, listen, Mary.
There's somebody who knows you.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, you know, I guess it all comes back to believing that you can have intellectual mastery of all these different aspects of your financial life. And if you just take the time, you can build.
And just get started. And if you just do a little bit and you look back a year from now, 2 years from now, you might be surprised at how much progress you made.
Right. Right. I don't know. What I'm hearing in these situations is everybody's got this program in their head.
Mm-hmm.
Of, oh, my account's not important. And whatever the story is out there about what's going on, it doesn't relate to me and my account. I don't need to think about it.
Yeah.
So there's an inability to, you know, that you can watch the war in general, but you need to, you know, you need to start to bring it into the risk management, your intimate space.
Yeah, and then you'll be better able to handle it.
Right.
Until the tank is rolling down your driveway, you know, then if you prepare ahead of time, you'll have a better experience.
Right. Okay. So the equity markets have brought index because of the tech stocks outperformed gold, outperformed bonds. Now here's the interesting thing. So I've been saying for many years, the bull in bonds is over. Now, at the same time, right now, you can lock up 4-5% in a decent credit on a bond or a bank deposit.
On a short-term one.
On a short-term one. And
because the yield curve, which is all the rates dotted out and with a line, the longer-term ones are lower than the shorter ones. In 3 to 6 months, a CD and any of those things, you can get 5% annualized.
Right, but even long-term, you can get a better rate than you could 2 or 3 years ago.
Yes, I personally wouldn't want to be tying up long term.
Right. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. But if the chances of deflation are rising, which they clearly are, you know, is fixed income starting to look a little bit attractive?
Well, because that's what fixed income is primarily for. One key function of that is to protect against deflation.
Right.
And that's because if you have people, you have $10,000 in an account and everybody got thrown out of a job and they can't pay for anything anymore, and the price got cut in half, now you can buy twice as many things with the same amount of money.
Right.
So, yes, bonds look more attractive. To me, just staying in the shorter maturities is keeping your powder dry more.
Right. And so basically, you know, a 6 to 18 month bank CD is where you're going to make money.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Okay, well, Tim, anything else we want to cover? What do you expect over the next 3 months before we do our next equity overview? What are you looking at? What are you worried about personally?
I think about the old saying in the stock market that says, sell in May and go away.
Right.
And then I think about, when do you come back? And
right.
Is it in September? Is it in when school starts or whatever?
Well, here's the other thing. If you're buying, so what I do is I'm in a savings plan. I just buy a little bit every month.
Yeah.
But, you know, the challenge you have right now is things are relatively high. And if the chances of deflation are going up, where do you buy? It's not just do you buy in, but what do you buy?
Yeah. I'd say your approach, buying it in stages, if you're going, putting new money into the market, spread it out.
Right.
Dollar cost average.
Right.
Don't, because you don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. And even if you look at the VIX, it's at a very low level historically.
We, you know, on Money and Markets, we look at the VIX almost every week.
Yeah.
And you just, you think, how can the VIX be this low this often?
Yeah.
It makes
sense. I saw a headline on the news, because people kind of get it, I think. If you're old enough, you've watched this game over and over. And the headline was something to the effect of the VIX is at the lowest level since 1987. So the person that wrote that headline was making a statement there.
Right.
Not, they don't know what's going to happen, but I don't know. Like I would just expect unexpected volatility.
Right.
And be prepared for that. If you're putting new money in, put it in steps so that you're not subject. If you put it all in once and tomorrow there's a shocking thing that happens, that you're not have a big negative event.
Right. Well, but I have companies I love, and so when it gets slammed, anytime they get slammed, it's like, oh, a sale.
Well, also know why you own things. If
right.
you own it for the long term, it is a sale.
Right.
Because you're not looking to sell it in the short term.
Right. Well, that's what I want. I want to know a company. Who's the company that can turtle through anything that can happen over the next 10 years? That's what I want.
Well, like you, I have always listened to your saying that if whoever figures out how to collect space garbage will be the best investment.
That will be
so
the
things
great
like that, yeah.
I said that, and then a company got started in Zurich a couple of years ago that's doing cleanup of space debris.
Yeah.
And it's a tough, I mean, talk about an engineering challenge. It's a tough engineering challenge, but it's really good. The one thing I will say, and I will close on this note, is because of what we do at Solari, we read a lot of sort of very negative, you know, there's a huge flow of negative information every day. Yet what we do with Solari Investment Screen is every day we're underwriting companies all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And each one we find, Ricardo and I find these beautiful companies that mm-hmm. are amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been doing things for generations. You look at them, it's like, you know, I love them because it's like their own little world. And what they're accomplishing and what they do is just astonishing.
Yeah.
And yet it's like a secret. No one knows about it. And there are literally hundreds and hundreds of them all over the world, and it's quite beautiful.
I just say, to me, that's true in the local community also. There are good people out there.
Yeah.
Don't spend time getting bogged down with worry. Go out and introduce yourself to somebody. There are good people in your local community. Get to know them.
Right. Right. And we've been working a lot with state and local legislators because if you look at what's happening with trying to protect financial transaction freedom, that's where the action is.
Mm-hmm.
So I would also say not only get to know them, get to know your state.
Also get to know them. I had a recent local legislator go to a meeting about development, asking a developer to not put in natural gas in an apartment building that has 300 apartments because of global warming. And I was shocked. This is a very local, state-level legislator that showed up at a public meeting to ask that.
Wow.
So it's important to keep fighting that narrative too. Be that, if I knew that person was there, I would have been there also to speak against it. But now I know.
Right. Okay, well, this has been a very, very useful conversation. Any other thoughts you want to add before we go?
I think it's summertime. Get out and enjoy the beautiful weather.
Oh, definitely. Enjoy nature. So we'll get off the screens.
Yes, exactly.
Tim, thank you very much.
Thanks, Catherine.
Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful day. And thank you for joining us on the Solari Report. We'll be back with Equity Overview in the next wrap-up in 3 months. Have a great day.